Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined by Peter Overzet and Pat Corain today. This is our Scott Fishbowl recap episode. Our drafts are not done, but they're getting there. Some drafts have wrapped up. I actually just saw on Josh ADHD's app, Peter, imagine being in the eighth round right now. Imagine being the draft that's literally in the eighth round right now.
You know how I can imagine it? It'd be if Pat Corain was in my league.
Yeah, I'm like, I basically am in the eighth round right now.
See, Mr. Pat, who needs a full 12 hours on the clock in his war room to figure out who to pick.
Hey, I take this draft seriously, guys. I don't know why it's such a breezy little afternoon romp for you.
I mean, we have all like workshopped our picks out together. It's just like we've done it beforehand, and it feels like you don't actually think about what you want to do with your pick until it gets there. Is that because you're on the turn, maybe?
There's sort of an element of like fully thinking out my options at some picks. With some picks, I'm like, okay, I have a plan. But then when it comes back to me, I'm like, hang on, I just saw another way to go here. And that happened really, really hardcore at the 4-5 turn, where I considered doing a Tannehill, AJ Brown stack. And then I ultimately went with Juju and DJ Moore, and then brought that back later on the next turn with a Teddy Bridgewater to complete the Panthers trifecta of CMC, DJ Moore, and Teddy Bridgewater. So.
But back to the point at hand, you're a mentally weak sheep who needs a bunch of time, whereas I'm at the portion of the draft where I have pre-drafted my last four picks. I mean, we're snap pick Pete.
So I was pre-drafting my picks, but then you know when you go to the bottom and the average time waiting to make the pick, if you pre-draft your pick, it doesn't count. So it makes it seem like you're actually taking longer if you pre-draft your pick. No, 100%. No, go look at number of picks. You will have a lower number of picks than your other league mates because it doesn't count as making a pick when you have pre-drafted.
Remember when you called me a mentally weak sheep and then argued about how to look better in the who drafted the quickest bar? Come on, guys.
Yeah, you are right, Davis. This is absolute bullshit. I'm by far the fastest drafter in
seriously,
my league.
Seriously. It is.
Come on. Yeah. All right. MFL, I'm going to have a word with you after this.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to look at your team first, Pat, because Peter and I selected from the same draft slot, so it'll be a little bit easier for us to talk about some of the decisions we have. But you, well, first of all, you started.
Also, I've only had like three picks, so it'll be easy to cover.
Yeah, well, you really are in the ninth round. That's really incredible. you're grinding those picks out, Pat. Okay, so you took Christian McCaffrey 101. I mean, did you look at any of the math at all, like thinking of taking Lamar or Mahomes in any way? Because it actually, I mean, I don't want to say 50-50, but like Lamar and Mahomes have gone first overall in like a reasonable portion of these drafts.
I did consider, I would have gone Mahomes, and yes, I considered doing that. But yeah, I think I was hoping I could come back and get Kyler, which is what happened. And it was a little risky because I could have been a little bit in a tough spot at quarterback if that didn't happen. But I really like how it played out. I like getting McCaffrey because I actually think this is a sneaky format for like zero or modified zero running back builds. And so
it's sneaky. I think you look at the people who do projections and who are good at math, and universally they are doing zero running back drafts or modified zero running back drafts. Do we know anyone who we consider to be very, very good at fantasy who started with like three running backs?
I'm sure we're offending someone right now.
So, I mean, right. I'm sure someone out there is like, you know, I'm good. And I'm sure one of our friends, you know, did do it or whatever. But like, I think JJ took JJ took Kenyon Drake 211 after starting with Barkley. So there's a team that started running back.
I mean, my overall thought, it obviously in general, I think in regular standard drafts that drafting these running backs in the mid second through the fourth and fifth round is just bad process. And I think it really holds true in this same format too. And because of it, I think you're getting the zero running back targets incredibly cheap, you know?
Oh, late. Yeah. So I just got Pollard in the 13th round.
Wow. Right. And where Pat and I in previous years in the FFPC contest, we have gotten absolutely squeezed on zero running back candidates.
Tony Pollard goes in the eighth round now.
Right. Yeah. So to me, in those formats, I get the justification on loading up earlier because, yeah, I'd probably rather have Aaron Jones in the third than, you know, last year, Darwin Thompson in the seventh, right? So I get it. But here, the format is so conducive to spreading things out that it does lend itself to that structural strategy. So I do think the only kind of mistake you could make in this draft would be loading up on running backs in the second and third round. Otherwise, I think you can justify a lot of different builds.
I'll take one further. I think drafting Leonard Fournette, Melvin Gordon, David Montgomery, I think that you look at some of the wide receivers who go in between rounds 4, 5, and 6. So we have DJ Moore, AJ Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, DJ Shark, you know, in some leagues, even Mike Evans and Chris Godwin were going that late. And people were like, you know, double tapping running backs in that area. And I think that's like the biggest mistake that people make, I think.
Well, that's what I mean. Those guys, Fournette is going ADP 33.7, Gordon 43.9. So, I mean, that's the range I'm talking about there too.
Yeah. Right. I completely agree. I think that's the worst range to have gone running back because of the bust rates. There's a lot of flexes in this league and it's like, you can project.
You can start 7 wide receivers.
Yeah. I mean, Montgomery maybe projects for like more points than like whatever wide receiver is going next to, but he's just infinitely more likely to disappoint than the wide receivers in that range.
And the thing too is when you think about just like running back and wide receiver stuff, you know, if you're drafting like Montgomery, like what are the chances that he's going to give you like a C-Max, a Quan ceiling week versus even like a Stephon Diggs there where yes, his production might be over, but he can have week winning weeks for you on that spike production. I just don't see how guys like David Montgomery are going to give you that really elite ceiling you want there.
And Diggs is not going to be on your bench during that spike week because you're not going to be deep enough. There's just exactly. Too many flexes.
That's such a huge point is like, you're not going to be benching Will Fuller. You know, you're not going to be benching Christian Kirk. Like those guys are just going to be your starters every week. Yeah. And you're like, sure. Some weeks they'll get 4 PPR points or Scott Fishbowl points as it were, but like also they're like, they can also get 22 points without a touchdown, like very easily in this scoring. And yeah, that's Pat. I think you make a great point that people are so conditioned to being like, well, am I going to start Anthony Miller or am I going to bench Anthony Miller? And like the answer is you're just starting him every single week and you're eating it when he sucks, but you're reaping all the benefits of the good weeks.
And yep. This is another simplistic thing about why zero RB works. So like Anthony Miller is actually a really good example of, it is hard sometimes to know to start him, but if you go zero running back, you have generally a definitive idea of what kind of production you're going to get from that start. If I have Zach Moss as my RB2 and Singletary's hurt or whatever, like I know what I can expect out of him. It's like a more binary proposition where you are guessing when you're having to fill your late flexes with fringe wide receivers like that. So I'd rather have a super fragile team. Yeah, maybe those guys don't hit, but if they do hit, I know the production they get and I have a much higher floor and ceiling from my deeper wide receivers.
Yeah, and I think also like I was relatively committed to like the modified zero RB structure, but now seeing the like wild discount I'm getting on all the guys I like drafting late, like Paul, like I just, I, on the 13-14 turn, I just got Boston Scott and Tony Pollard who were like, when I was sitting down to do my strategy, I was like, yeah, I mean, it's going to kind of fall apart if I'm not able to get, you know, 2 of Scott, Pollard, Edmonds, Daryl Henderson, you know, who I kind of think of as like the best zero RB targets who like also if in week 4, I have to start one of them at RB2, it's not like a total disaster. Like they're not going to get 0 points. So Pat, how are you? You're sitting there, you know, with 9 roster spots filled. You do not have a stack for Kyler. Is Kirk still on the board?
He is still on the board. And I think I'm like 2 or 3 picks away from being back on the clock here. So, he is definitely a target.
So by like Sunday, you probably will have made like the second of those 2 picks.
Yeah. Well, Nick Whalen's on the clock and he was very unhappy with me for sitting on the clock. So we'll have to
Pat,
see how long.
You also, Pat actually signs up for a 12-hour meditation workshop every time he's on the clock, just to really kind of clear his head.
Yeah, that's right. I actually, I pre-draft the pick. I have like a scheduled pre-draft to go on 6 hours on the clock and then I can eat the other clock while I'm on the turn.
Goodness.
I get 12 hours later.
I do need to make this point. You know, I think that like in our world, we think of ideas as universal. I basically outside of, I just, people are not stacking, right? People are not making a conscious effort like Leonie did, Drew did. You know, I definitely am doing it with my team, as evidenced by the fact that I just took Sammy Watkins in the 11th round. But like, I mean, Peter, do you have a sense of like why people aren't doing this?
Well, I guess I will say just anecdotally, I feel like I've seen a lot of screenshots with people being excited about their stack. So I don't think it's a, I bet in the aggregate, you're right. Like it's a minority strategy. Maybe
yeah, people tweet about it for sure. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. It's a vocal minority is what we're establishing here. I mean, my whole thing with the stacking was, if it synced up well and I wasn't hemorrhaging too much value, I would do it. And I ended up with the double stack with, I have Nuke and Kyler and I have Big Ben and Juju. And I haven't been forcing anything, but I did specifically want to make those stacks happen.
Like you took Juju over AJ Brown, right? Because that was, well, I mean, we like Juju a little bit more anyways, but that's close, right?
Yeah. Well, part of that was, I actually need to look at my board again to see how that went. I think I thought I had another chance at AJ Brown coming back, which I ended up not getting.
I mean, he has gone very late I've seen people getting him in the seventh round. I think I took him in the fifth round.
Yeah. I did the same thing where I really considered taking him over Juju and figured I had to at least give myself the chance for him to come back. And then also thought that Roethlisberger had a better chance to come back than Tannehill did.
Your room, it really gave you a break. Being able to get Bridgewater at the 701, and then being able to get your boy Daily Rojo at the 812 in a way that my room did not give me a break on Ronald Jones and completing my stacks.
I love Ronald Jones in this format. I mean, like, I love first down.
We don't need format. This format is redundant. Okay, just say you love Ronald.
I don't know.
I think this format is completely redundant for running backs. It's just totally playing time.
I also want to make Pat feel bad real quick. Teddy Bridgewater went at 10-10 in my league.
Well, it's called stacking, Pete, and it's important as a part of a game theory.
I think that's bad of your league mates, not bad of Pat. I think Bridgewater in hashtag this format, in a totally non-facetious way, I actually think Bridgewater is a great fit for the low sack, high completion scoring, because that's what he offers NFL teams. So
yeah, and I really like the kind of the team stack thing I have going on with Bridgewater, Moore, and CMC. I like making a bet on an offense to, you know, exceed expectations.
Yeah. Are you wanting to take Curtis Samuel later on in this?
Yeah, I was thinking about how to play it because
or Ian Thomas. Ian Thomas is actually probably maybe even better because Curtis Samuel's ceiling interferes with both DJ Moore and CMC ceiling, but Ian Thomas, you know, just getting like 95 targets doesn't interfere with either.
Yeah, I was looking at Evan Silva's team preview of the Panthers to try to figure out my next move, and he was making the point that like Curtis Samuel in a theoretical role change could be quite productive.
Could be great.
Would probably really fit, you know, the short passing game that I'm playing, you know, with Teddy. So I don't really have any interest in Robbie Anderson because I think he doesn't really fit the
I think Robbie Anderson signed up to run wind sprints all year. That's been my opinion.
Yeah. So I think Ian Thomas is probably the guy I want first, though, given the, you know, the tight end bonuses. I was actually considering him with this next pick, although it's a little aggressive. What do you guys – I mean, I would take, like, Kirk and then Ian Thomas instead of, like, you know, Kirk and another wide receiver or Kirk and – like Jonnu would be maybe the other tight end available here.
So I guess my only thing, I do like the idea of stacking. I want to do it. It makes complete logical sense. If this happens, if I draft Nuke and I need him to go off to win this Scott Fishbowl, I'm also getting
the points from Kyler.
Now, the question that I want to pose to you guys is, where is the tipping point for that as far as to Pat's point, the team stack. Like, I can even understand the double stack, but like, can you get a ceiling game from every one of those Panthers in a money week?
It's only with the offenses who you, like, I think the offenses that can do it, and maybe you guys will disagree. I think it's the Cowboys. I think it's the Chiefs, and I think it is the 95th percentile Cardinals. And I think those are the teams that can score enough points and run enough plays to get like four or five guys there on a given week. And maybe it's the Panthers because they have had that super narrow volume tree where like basically like 90% of their offense goes to four guys. And I'm sure there are people listening to this that like want their favorite team to be in that list. But for me, like it really is kind of just those three teams. Would you like to add another team to that list, Pat?
No other teams come to mind. I guess what I would say is when you're thinking about this, it's easier to get there if you have a running back dominating, you know, just a workhorse running back because of the first downs. And also if you have a tight end as part of the mix because of the bonuses here. So,
well, it getting there from a tight end can be like 18 points. So it like instead of like 26, you know?
Right. So it's going to be a lot harder to pull off if you're trying to stack like two or three wide receivers with a quarterback. That's
you know what? I will add the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to that list, assuming that Brady is Brady, where in a money week, I could see Brady, Evans, Godwin, and then one of Gronk and or Rojo all getting there, you know, kind of multiple times throughout the season. And then possibly the Falcons if Todd Gurley is healthy and monopolizes that. But that's kind of where I would draw the line.
Yeah, the Falcons is an interesting one because you could see Hurst getting there, you know, on the bonuses as well.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I do – it's hyper-fragile, right? It has a really low floor, but it also has a super, super high ceiling. Like, if you catch that Saints 49ers game, you know, and you have all those Saints and all those 49ers, like, I mean, you're going to the moon. That's how you win these leagues with a kind of a hyper-fragile strategy.
But I also think it's not like – while the playoffs are – kind of closer to a true like GPP.
Yeah.
It isn't like a GPP where you need like every single guy to go off in the same week. You just need to be like capturing pieces of the best offenses. And if, you know, if you happen to pick right on an offense,
well,
go a little bit more than just like, you don't want to dabble.
So another point is that not only can you make the playoffs based on total like your win-loss record, but you can also make the playoffs on total points, and stacking and the correlations from stacking are huge for garnering total points. So that's, you know, another reason to do it. So I want to move over to Pete's team, which so Pete and I drafted from the same draft slot.
The game theory optimal slot.
I mean, I just like also actually after watching the drafts play out, I think it like became absurdly clear why it was GTO. Like Pat, come on, are you jealous, bro? Pat, are you jealous?
I'm not jealous. I mean, you guys saw my team, feeling pretty good, but
it's pretty good. But you know, Friedman had happened to you. What Peter and I said was theoretically possible, which was he asked for the 101 and he got stuck with the worst slot, which was the 12-13 turn.
Yeah, I did see that happen to Friedman.
Cautionary tale for you next year, Pat.
Yeah, you think about that, bud. I want you to think about it. So you start your draft abandoning all of your principles, obviously, Pete, by taking Saquon. I don't really think you had a choice. Like once Lamar and Mahomes go, it's not like you can take Michael Thomas, you know, just for the brand. And
it would have literally been only for Battier equity. That would have been the only reason.
Literally it, yeah. And I mean the rest of your draft, you stuck to your principles, right? Like it's just, you didn't take a running back again until you took fat Zach Moss at the 1209. And our rounds 2 through 5, remarkably similar, where we both took Kyler, we both took DeAndre. How happy were you feeling about that one?
Yeah, I was stoked with those three wide receivers there. I actually looked in the Who Drafted Him thing on ADHD's app, and you know, there were lots of people to take Nuke and DJ Moore, but I'm the only one in the contest to have all three of those guys. And considering I have the double stack with two of them, I probably should have. I could have maybe, I would have had the only triple stack in the league. I could have gotten Bridgewater to have it with DJ Moore too. I probably should have done that.
No, I think a huge mistake. I'm wondering if you guys agree with this, but this has been my opinion, which is if you have two quarterbacks who you're like, I'm never going to bench them or on the basis of matchups. Like you're like, I spent equity on this guy. I think this guy projects really well. I'm not benching him because he happens to play the 49ers or the Ravens or whatever. I think you basically should not take a third quarterback until all the starters are gone. Like it should be Fitzpatrick, Herbert, Foles, like be the guys that you were targeting. Do you agree or disagree?
No, I do agree. Again, I was kind of joking that it would have been fun to have the triple stack, but I've completely punted it, the third QB, purposefully, just from familiarity with this contest and how easy it is to find like the backup quarterbacks on the waivers. And like you said, that it's unnecessary if you're starting them every week. And I'm trying to build out the best possible starting lineup. So I want to load up on, you know, these zero running back targets.
Yeah,
right,
you,
now.
You don't want to be making cautionary moves based on what happens if your second round pick gets hurt. Like you're screwed anyway.
Yeah. Like the whole idea of zero RB is like my entire lineup is set and now I'm trying to bink two really high upside running backs and I need as many darts to accomplish that.
Yeah. And the third quarterback in that premium range is really more of a floor raising move. It's not really a ceiling raising move. And the other thing is that a lot of these quarterbacks in that range are some of the worst picks, I think, because they can get you those negative weeks. And you know, they're more the mistake prone guys who are usually in like more normal scoring are kind of interesting late round throws, but here they can really, really hurt.
Yeah. I gotta say, I think there are definitely some people out there who drafted, who like double tapped the Josh Allen, Daniel Jones, like, like grouping. And like, there are going to be some adventures in that format. And, you know, we got into this argument on Twitter with Jeff Collins, who was like, you know, if you took Kyler Murray in this format, you're a fish. Right. And, you know, me, you and Gretch all took Kyler Murray. And you did too, Pat, right, Pat?
Yeah, I took him.
Yeah, so we all took Kyler Murray, clearly disagreeing with this.
I did really enjoy your response to him.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Twitter we're all there to have a good time. But I mean, my thought was just after Kyler, it becomes a desert of guys I don't want at all. I do not want to be starting you know, Sam Darnold. I do not want to be starting Derek Carr, even though we think he's like a decent fit for this format. Like I came into this draft thinking like, no, I want two quarterbacks who are going to be good. And the Roethlisberger discount I've seen is absurd. I think Pete, I think you took great advantage of that.
Well, one thing to that point of wanting to lock up Kyler there and the fact that I think we all agree that there's some pretty big tier breaks at quarterback, I think it's hard for people to wrap their heads around because we have this late round QB ideology hardwired into us over these years. But we've seen in super flex drafts now that there isn't a huge opportunity cost to taking these elite QBs here. Like when you look at the 2v2s, like you said, the Sam Darnold versus your what? Who are you taking here? Aaron Jones, Melvin Gordon, whatever? Like versus Kyler Murray in the running back you're taking later? Like to me, it doesn't even seem close. But I think it's just hard for people to be like, no, I can go late round QB. It's so deep. But it's like, no, you're getting a high ceiling, high floor guy, and it's freeing you up for other guys you like in those rounds, later rounds.
Yeah, I mean, it just allows you like to get into what we're talking about. Like instead of drafting, like literally Nick Foles went ahead of Tony Pollard in my league. And like, imagine having to click Nick Foles because you need that third quarterback instead of your favorite zero RB guy. So you were, I don't know, like when you took Hunter Henry at the 609, and we talked about this on the Swolecast a little bit, but like who was on the board there that you were like, you're like, okay, whatever, I'm taking Hunter Henry instead of, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, so I had this tier of wide receivers I was sweating, particularly AJ Brown and DJ Chark, and they went, three and six picks ahead of me. Evan Ingram goes, and I'm sitting there looking at, you know, if I could do it over again, knowing I was going to get grown-ass men, Gesicki and Hockenson, I would have taken McLaurin or Sutton there. Yeah. But I was just looking and I was worried about an impending tight end run. Cause I was like, the elite guys are off the board.
It never came.
It never came.
In any league. I have like, Pat, have you seen it happen in any leagues? Like the tight end run, it seems like it's never coming.
Yeah. My league it's getting a little dry in my league, but I got Mark Andrews. So I haven't really been sweating it.
Yeah. That was my fear, is that like there was going to snap off this run. You know, I had some positional needs, and I did, you know, one of my things, I really wanted Andrews in the third where Pat got him, and he went late second in my league. And then my strategy was like, I want to get 2 to 3 of these breakout tight ends to really try to have a chance to compete with the teams that got the elite tight end. And I just kind of panicked on the clock. Henry isn't even one of my guys, but I just didn't want to pull the trigger on Sutton or McLaurin there and then get squeezed out on tight ends. But yeah, I'd love a mulligan on that one.
Yeah. I would recommend taking, you know, another 3-4 hours on the clock next time. Really think it over.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm in my group chat and man, my goal is to never get added that I'm on the clock. There's nothing worse than the at, whereas Pat is getting gifts of his like head getting smashed in.
But Pat welcomes it though. Yeah. Pat, I mean, he's all about, you know, thinking out about all of his, you know, thinking through all of his decisions. Okay. When you took Gesicki and Hockenson, was Noah Fant on the board and you preferred, cause I got in this argument with Gretsch yesterday, and we, because it was on the Swolecast, we didn't actually have time to flesh it out. Like Kitchen was like, AJ Brown or something instead. So was Fant in the consideration at all for you there or no?
He ended up, so I'll preface this by saying like, I definitely have my favorites that I prefer, but I've generally been trying to play the ADP game, looking at the app, seeing the probability of who's going to be there. And Fant is a guy that has been slipping an extra round past Gesicki and Hockenson. So I was willing to gamble. My personal preference is Hockenson, Gesicki, Fant, but I don't have a huge gap around them. And so I got Gesicki because he's been going higher than Hockenson and SFB ADP, grabbed Hockenson, and then ended up positionally not needing to get Fant. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Corinne, this is your chance to do your, you know, your anti-Gesicki tirade.
Okay, yeah. I don't really get it with Gesicki. I get that he plays in the slot a ton last year, or you know, we are expecting that to continue, but he already led the league in tight end snaps out of the slot, so it's not like there's some like new role that he's going to be able to, he's basically, it's already all baked in to what we saw, I think, unless he just converts to wide receiver. And he wasn't very efficient in yards per out run last year. I've been looking at like tight end breakouts and what they look like the year before in yards per out run, and it would be not unprecedented, because guys like Gary Barnage and a few other dudes like Julius Thomas kind of came like out of nowhere.
Gary Barnage, the GOAT.
Yeah, so it can happen, but it's like it does not tend to happen. And most of the guys who were inefficient the year before and then had breakout seasons, like 200-plus tight end premium seasons, were tied to elite quarterbacks. So I just don't really think he has the ceiling that some of the other guys have. Like, I think Hockenson and Fant have higher ceilings. And I'm just not really on board with the whole Gesicki love. I also, like, specifically this came up in, like, Gesicki versus Higbee context. And while I get a lot of the anti-Higbee arguments, I mean –
I took Higbee. I let you get in my head, Pat, and I took, for the very first time in a draft this offseason, I took Higbee. I didn't feel great about it. You know, this is a very unique thing to like our niche culture, but like you're on the clock in a slow draft and you go to the Google News, and you search the name of the player and you go to like find what like local newspapers have been writing about the guy. I like had to go through that with Higbee and Gerald Everett before I made my decision, because like I was really sweating it that close between him and Gesicki.
Yeah, I've been on the Athletic a lot looking at that stuff, looking at the beat writers' opinions on it, and they're kind of as blown away by Higbee's, you know, last 5 games or whatever as everyone else. But the thing for me is that they re-signed Higbee around this time last year. There's really no, Pete was making fun of me for saying there's no buzz around Everett since there's no buzz around
There is buzz around Everett, though. McVay, like, the, if you search for Tyler Higbee stuff right now, the most recent thing you'll get is Sean McVay saying, like, we got to get him more involved. We got to use it. We got to use Everett more.
Oh, wow, Pat. But nothing about his contract.
I just, I think they made it pretty clear who they value when they re-signed Higbee in this position, and there's really nothing about him, about Everett getting re-signed now. And Higbee was awesome last year on this season in terms of yards per out run, not just during that stretch. So I think that it's definitely a little bit of a scary play because we're operating off a pretty small sample, but he was absolutely like mind melting in that sample. And the offense as a whole was better. So I mean, I don't know. To me, it's just not really that close with those two.
The thing too, that just in a macro sense about the Rams, I mean, they really had this weird year where Cooper Kupp and Gerald Everett were the guys early in the season. And then the second half, it was Bobby Trees and Higbee. It, like this. Right. And I know,
it felt totally random though. Yeah, I agree.
Like Woods was dominant. I mean, and Higbee, those guys just absolutely hogged all of the targets down the stretch. In a way, like, I still have no idea what happened to Cooper Kupp down the stretch.
Well, the Cooper Kupp apologists, of which I am not one, have spent all offseason saying he was hurt. I don't know if I buy it.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I mean, like if he's hurt, then just, like, don't play him, you know, like, let good Mike Thomas play. Like, losing snaps to Josh Reynolds is inexcusable, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah, that was weird.
It was strange.
And then Pete, you took Fuller and Debo. To be honest, like, Debo's just not a guy I'm taking because I don't like my take has been enough guys are going to get injured in the course of the season. I don't want to take a guy who's going into the season with an injury. I'm assuming that Christian Kirk was off the board for you when you picked Fuller.
Yeah, I wanted Kirk. He went a few picks before.
Fuller is elite though.
Pat and I have been talking about Fuller a little bit, and I just don't know why people are down on him. Like, his target floor is going higher. Everyone still expects Deshaun Watson to be great based on his ADP. Are you really worried about Brandon Cooks and Kenny Stills? I mean,
it's literally just that he gets hurt, right? And yeah. People are like, well, he gets hurt, so I can't draft him.
Right, and I'm trying to win first place in a 1,400 person free contest, so like I'm willing to take.
I'm trying to make my pinned tweet that I won this so that Jacob Rickroad won't at me.
The other thing with Fuller is that he's healthy. Like, he's not, you know, there's real concerns, as you mentioned, with Debo Samuel. Like, he is literally hurt right now. Fuller is not like really coming. He's not rehabbing off of something. He's entering the season healthy. Yeah, I get that he's been banged up like every year, and that like makes everyone nervous, but I think the smarter move is probably to fight that, you know, bias or whatever, because if he stays even healthy for like 14 games, he's going to smash.
Yeah. I guess I'm like looking at my board now, curious what your guys, this would have been a 2v2 I could have had with Debo. I could have had Breida and N'Keal Harry, or I could have Debo and Tony Pollard. Who do you take?
I mean, I prefer Tony Pollard to basically every other zero RB candidate because he is the one guy. Well, I mean, maybe Edmonds too, I guess. But like if you remove the starter, like the starter, you know, has to go to the ICU because of COVID-19, Tony Pollard becomes a first round pick. Like he's going like fourth overall if something happens to Zeke. And again, as we're talking about tournament, 1,400 people, you're trying to win. Like you got to take Pollard. Like I think he's like a mandatory selection.
I agree. I really like Pollard.
You would have taken that the 2v2 I did as well?
Even not liking Debo, I still think the Pollard side is so much better.
And to me, the Debo thing, again, I know there's a ton of risk with how quickly he can come back. But again, I'm trying to think about Debo in my starting lineup for the playoff stretch and knowing I can probably patch over him early in the season.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm with you. It seems fine. The Zach Moss pick, I mean, I just don't like him, but a lot of people do like him, like for sure. So I'm not knocking it. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I think he's just wildly undervalued, in all drafts, and especially, I mean, getting him at the end of the 12th round. I mean, I think it's a 1A, 1B with Devin Singletary, and they drafted him to take that Frank Gore role. He's probably going to get the goal line carries. He was actually, and Pat, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he was competent as a pass catcher coming out too. So if they do kind of the Devonta Freeman, Tevin Coleman arrangement where it's like they're alternating series, but getting like the three down work when they are in, which I think is possible. And he gets most of the goal line carries in a run heavy offense. I mean, I just think he's like 2 to 3 rounds minimum too cheap.
Yeah. And I think he's someone who benefits from this format because he's probably going to be getting, you know, more of the early down work than Singletary at some point or in some games. So, and I think
Singletary, what if he's just the starter? What if they're like,
yeah, it could be.
What if they're like Singletubby's just like the third down back, you know?
Yeah. And I don't even mind Singletary's ADP, you know, when he's going in the sixth, seventh. I just think Moss should probably be going, you know, a round or two after him. I just don't know why we're so confident. I mean, Singletary did look good down the stretch, but I'm not believing that he just has that locked up.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that pick.
And then I get like my draft very, very similar to yours. I started with Mahomes instead. I think it's going to haunt me this whole time that I did not take Tyreek Hill with the 209 and I took Kyler Murray instead. Like I literally think I'm going to like regret that all year that I just didn't give myself a chance to complete that stack.
I don't know, man. I think Kyler gives you a huge amount of upside at, you know, pretty critical position where there's not going to be that many ways to catch you if he hits.
Do all three of us have AJ Brown?
Come on. I don't.
Or Juju Smith-Schuster, I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we all just still believe, huh? Just it was Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph's fault and he did nothing wrong.
Yeah. I'm a little nervous about Juju, to be honest.
I do think there's some risk there, but I think he snaps back into form. I really do.
Yeah. And I clearly agree.
And to me, it's like, I'm not worried about Juju, the talent. It's, are we going to get a full healthy 16 games from
season
Big Ben?
Yeah.
And if we do, I think Juju's going to be right there. I mean, Pat and I were not really deciding, but our conversation, we were on the clock for our main event draft in the third round. We were super stoked to get DJ Moore, but Juju Smith-Schuster was going to be the fallback. And I can see Juju having a very similar year to DJ Moore this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was also looking at Pat Thorman's Pace article on that. And he was like, it just reminded me that it's not just that the level of play dropped off completely when Roethlisberger went out, but they slowed the game way, way, way down. And so I think you could just be looking at like a bigger pie, you know, more passing, more plays, and a hell of a lot better talent at quarterback. So should be good.
And you're getting essentially a round discount just because he was out last year.
You're getting a 2-round discount. He was going at the beginning of the second round in high stakes leagues last year, sometimes even in the first.
Right. Sorry. I meant in like the fishbowl relative to where I think he would be going a round earlier, but yeah.
So the one pick I made that I think you guys were not on board with is I took J.K. Dobbins with my 7th round pick, 76th overall, as my anchor RB. I like, again, in hashtag this format where all we care about is getting first, like if something happens to Ingram or if he's just like better than they thought, like he gets what, like 14 touchdowns just like pretty much from existing.
Who else were you deciding between there?
I think I was just going to take another wide receiver. I think I probably would have taken DK Metcalf had I not taken him and would have just kept it going with no running backs at all.
Yeah. I guess my thing is I certainly see the upside scenario for JK Dobbins. I just view him closer to some of those zero RB targets. Like I don't even know if there's a huge difference between Dobbins and Tony Pollard. I don't know if that's a hot take, but that's how it kind of feels to me.
I mean, it is a hot take in the sense of ADP. I don't even really disagree with your like logic there. I think from week one, Dobbins should have like what, you know, worst case scenario, he's getting like 5 carries a week, maybe at least, which I, as I'm saying it out loud, like sounds terrible for my 7th round pick. But at the same time, like you do, like, yes, you can start 7 wide receivers, but the rules do actually force you to select, like you have to start 2 running backs. And I would prefer to have a couple guys with like rational, like achievable ceilings. I don't know. Maybe I'm just justifying the selection because I got jittery about not having a running back.
I know we've joked about the 101 versus the 104, but I do think this was kind
that
of
that was an edge.
Yeah, yeah, for having McCaffrey here, because you passed on Cortland Sutton, Terry McLaurin, DK Metcalf, Stephon Diggs, Tyler Lockett. There's a bunch of Keenan Allen. There's a bunch of wide receivers here that I think will be pretty solid. So it's a pretty big opportunity cost, but I understand like you don't have any running backs to this point.
What were the other running backs that you would have taken if, say, Dobbins wasn't there?
I mean, he was the last. So he was the last of a tier. To give you an idea of the running backs that, that went after him in my league, Raheem Mostert goes immediately after. Then the next running back to go didn't, like, literally not another running back goes until the 906, which was Ronald Jones. So I probably would have taken Ronald Jones 93rd overall, 809, instead of Tyler Higbee. And like that 2v2 of Dobbins and Higbee versus like Metcalf and Rojo, I would prefer the Dobbins and Higbee side for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I think that's the what Pat said is true. It's like it's not a bad pick. It just structurally it forced sucks. You into that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that I totally agree with you, Pat. Having the 109 was nice. It's just, you know, we thought about like bimodal constructions and stuff. So, you know, I just, you know, we were thinking a little bit more about our picks.
I did this.
Yeah, I mean, you forced yourself into picking J.K. Dobbins. So you really thought it out well, didn't you?
Hey, they thought he was worth a first round pick, Pat. They had him graded as a.
Let's really make Davis feel bad. Britt Devine got Dobbins at pick 1008. Pat really lost it on that one.
I mean, that is
he. To be fair, he was the last guy, or he got J.K. Dobbins the latest of anyone.
So he got Dobbins. He got Dobbins where I took Tariq Cohen.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice life.
Hey, Sean took Tariq Cohen, so that means it's fine.
I think Tariq Cohen's a good pick.
Well, I think he is too, and I think he fits your build too, because there is a risk that Dobbins isn't like really startable right out of the gate. And
right
you're
away.
Want some immediate production that Cohen should give you.
Yeah. Okay. Let's, I guess you're not really here yet, Pat, but let's talk a little bit about like end game strategy, like the right way to use like your 14th through your 22nd overall picks. And I actually, like, as we started the show saying, like, I see people make massive mistakes with these picks of like, yeah, let me take my 4th quarterback. You know, like literally, like people are going to take Logan Woodside. People are going to select, you know, all kinds of guys who just have literally not a chance of ever finding their starting lineup. Pete, how are you approaching like closing this stuff out?
I think probably for like 80 or 90% of my picks, they're going to be rookies or handcuff running backs. And in a lot of cases, both of those. You know, it's rookie wide receivers. I'm going to be taking shots on all of those guys. Basically the people where there's kind of a black box upside premium to them. A lot of these guys, we know what they are. I don't know what T. Higgins is yet. You know, I don't know what some of these guys are. So those are the guys I want to take some shots on here late.
Yeah, I would add to that tight ends.
Yes. I'm taking Gerald Everett in mine.
Yeah, uh-oh. No, I think that's
– Pat. Pat shot down my Gerald Everett love last night.
In the main, but, you know, you're welcome to him on your Scott Fishbowl team.
oh, thank you. I have permission to draft whoever I want on my team.
In your free league?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I think guys like that, Everett's not one of my favorites, but, you know, a little later you can get like Dan Arnold, who – is,
I mean, I'm like literally, dude. Imagine this guy touting Dan Arnold to me in the year of our Lord 2020. Dude, it's Max Williams or bust, bro.
He sent me screen clippings of Dan Arnold propaganda. I mean, this
it's
guy's
Dan
off
Arnold,
the
bro.
Reservation.
Well, give me, sell me, because I have Kyler, and I would love to add. I'm probably taking Andy Isabella in like the 19th or 20th round. That is my current plan. But sell me on Dan Arnold over Andy Isabella as my Kyler Murray compliment.
So I was looking at what The Athletic was saying on him, and they were saying that the team thinks there could be a big role for Dan Arnold. Max Williams is viewed as a pass blocking tight end, though they do like him. Arnold came in off the street and contributed immediately. He was super efficient, and he's
good for the Saints too. But he has horrible knees. He cannot play that many snaps per game because his knees are so bad.
Well, he crushed in, you know, the limited time that the Cardinals gave him. I don't know about his knees. Maybe that's a reason to be off him. But he's I basically just want to take swings on these tight ends that have shown super efficient in like small samples, or we don't really know anything about. I don't really want the guys who we have larger samples on might get more playing time, but haven't really delivered big.
Like you're not wanting to take CJ Uzuma.
Exactly. I'm not really that interested in Uzuma.
See, I think he's awesome for this format because he just is going to play like 40 snaps a game, and you can literally take him with your last pick. And if you have to start him, you can start him.
I'd rather go with like Will Disley, who I have no idea if his Achilles.
Come on.
Dude, he was sick. He was sick. And, you know, it was a small sample, but. Well, first of all, I mean, Will Disley is going to be free. He probably will go undrafted in most leagues. So it's what's my opportunity cost here? I get to see if he's their starting tight end again. It's pretty – and if he is, like, that crushes.
Here's where you went wrong, Pat. Structurally, because you took Mark Andrews, it gave you a false sense of security at tight end. You were passing over a lot of the extreme values in the 6 through 10 rounds, and now you're forced to talk about guys like Dan Arnold and Will Disley.
Well, these aren't my tight end twos, to be clear, guys. To be clear, I'm saying that, you know, you want to be taking big swings at the back end.
And these feel like bunts.
How are these bunts? These guys
show Dan Arnold is a
scoring potential in small samples. All of these guys were awesome on the field when they played.
All right, I guess you can have them.
Yeah, Tyler, I don't hate taking. You did not convince me to take Dan Arnold over Andy Isabella though.
I mean, I don't think that you have to, like, make that choice. They both – you're going to have enough late-round picks to take both.
You think I should take both of them?
Yeah. Isabella's, I think, a really interesting high upside.
Yeah, Isabella, Miles Boykin, those guys, I think, are
interesting for sure. Yeah.
Really ideal ones.
Are you guys off Eifert, too? Do you hate
– I drafted him in some dino startups. I think he's worth a flyer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you have Minshew, that's a nice little layup. A guy I'm really hoping to get, I hope none of my league mates are listening to this, our clock is really slowed down right now. I really would like to get Antonio Gibson. Pat, you sold me on him, I think, like 3 weeks ago we did a show, and I kind of just looked at what the team was saying about him, and like, yeah, they have like 1,900 running backs, but like every single running back on their roster is terrible. So I can totally see the Gibson breakout.
Yeah, and they want to throw to the running back, I think. And they just have no other targets besides McLaurin in that offense. So,
don't disrespect Steven Sims like that, dude.
I stand by what I said.
That Gibson was my pick right before we came on the air. For starting my zero RB run, I went Moss, Pollard, Gibson. He was not a guy that was like on my radar during rookie draft season, but I've definitely been listening to the smart people, and I'm
the drum beat.
The appeal. The drum beat is reaching Darwinian levels.
Oh man, which is so brutal. Because like, if Darwin was a thing, we should be talking about it right here. But like, does he even make the team over DeAndre Washington?
Do you know what I'm gonna do? That I want to look it up, but I'm pretty sure last year I drafted Darwin at like this exact same.
I think I drafted him in the 16th round, I believe.
Yeah.
DeAndre Washington was actually pretty good last year. I think he probably makes the team over Darwin.
Should I draft DeAndre Washington with my 22nd round draft pick, Pat?
No.
I got to take as many – I mean, I'm taking DeMarcus Robinson in this for sure because I just got to load up on Chiefs.
I don't think I mean, Washington's just a pure pass catcher, so he's actually maybe not a great lot of
Man, I just pulled up my draft from last year. These were my zero running back targets. Tariq Cohen in the 9th, Ronald Jones in the 11th, Nyheim Hines in the 12th, Justice Hill in the 13th, Darwin Thompson in the 17th, Bryce Love in the 20th. Zero RB gone bad.
We probably did a podcast last year after, and we were probably fist pumping your team. Like, dude, I got all the guys I wanted. I just need one of these guys to hit, and it's just easy sailing from here.
My team was just dead. David Johnson in the 1st, Juju was my 1st wide receiver in the 2nd. Like, the team was dead on arrival.
I took Juju in the second last year. Yeah.
I took him, and I took Damien Williams, and I still made the playoffs. That's how you grind, bro.
Yeah, what a disaster. It is, man, it happens every year. Like, the picks feel so good when you make them. And you go back and look, and you're, like, lucky if you hit on a fourth of them.
A fourth of them.
Right.
When Tyler Higbee doesn't hit, though, I will be like, yeah, well, I knew what I was doing to myself before it happened, so I can't blame anyone. I just got to accept what I did.
I'm looking at my picks, my running back picks last year. I took Carlos Hyde in the 18th.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So gross, but it paid off.
What was it called last year?
What'd you say?
I'm looking at my historical leagues. I'm trying to see. I want to find mine. I'm trying to find, the action adventure. Okay. I wonder, I know that my team ended up being super frustrating. This is bad radio. Someone help me.
I took Alfred Blue last year.
How? what team was he even on?
He was on the Jaguars. So he's a bet against Fournette.
Well, just to illustrate how quickly ADP can move. So obviously the fishbowl happens early July. I just said I got Darwin Thompson in the 17th. By the time Pat and I drafted in a high stakes league the day before the draft, he went in the late 7th or early 8th. I mean, it's wild how much news can change ADP even in the span of 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I got Damien Williams in the 3rd round last year, and I was probably fist pumping it.
I just assume you always fist pump when you add a Chiefs player to your roster.
Jameis Winston in the 5th, super sharp. DJ Moore in the 6th, super sharp. I'm so good at this. Chris Godwin in the 7th. No wonder, dude. I'm so good at this.
Pat had a tweet that we scrounged up from last year in September where he was predicting DJ Moore being a second round pick, Pat?
Yeah, second round pick.
Yeah, so he
specifically
he
that I was going to be taking him in the second round. So a bit of a hedge in a way because I could just overdraft him, but yeah.
Well, I got stuck with Herndon in this. Not sharp.
No, I like Herndon. Wow.
Daniel
last year you took Herndon.
Yeah. Daniel Jones in the 19th. You just love to see it. Wow. Yeah, if you ever – oh, DJ Shark in the 21st, though.
Oh, ooh, that's nice.
I like that.
That's – there we go. So, Andy Isabel, like I wrote this article on SportsGrid a couple weeks ago about these wide receivers who can break out in the second year. You should just take, like, all of them because one of them is going to shark it up. Harry, Arcega-Whiteside, Boykin, Isabella, one of them is going to do it, right?
Yeah.
We got to
hope. I kind of like Boykin, yeah.
Boykin, because there's a clear role change there where a guy who played 500 snaps for them last year is not on the team and they did not sign anyone to fill it.
Yeah, he's a freak athlete too. Like if he hits, he could hit really big. And yeah, Isabel, I mean, he was awesome when he was on the field. I don't know why it took him so long to get on the field, but he's pretty interesting too.
All right, Davis, Pat and I have to go make a main event pick, so we got to wrap this up.
Okay, go do your mini-sode. This is gonna be simulcast, right? On your feed too.
Yeah, we can throw it on. I'll talk to Pat. We'll figure it out. We've been throwing a bunch of these mini-sodes up on our ship chasing feed for all of our main event picks. So we are on the clock here in the late 4th round and have to figure out what we're gonna do.
All right, everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back. Enjoy your draft. I hope you're not in a draft with Pat so you actually get done by the end of this weekend.
Nick Whalen, shout out to him. He got his pick in very quickly, so I might be up soon.
Doesn't that feel nice when your league mates get their pick in quickly, Pat?
I really appreciate it. I think it's a really classy move by Nick. And sometime around tomorrow or Saturday, I'll get my picks in.
Well, if you can do a quick rebrand, I will allow you to go from Pariah Pat to Pre-Draft Pat, but the onus is on you to make that happen.
Gotta do it. All right, later, boys.